Welcome to episode 43 of Published. This is the first part of a two-part series in which I'll speak with John Willig, a literary agent and publishing consultant at Literary Services, Inc. In part one, we're asking John all about the ins and outs of working with a literary agent, and in part two, we'll be discussing what the querying process looks like for authors today.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to Published. In this episode, we'll explore what it's like to work with a literary agent. Longtime agent John Willig explains what the role of a literary agent is in today's publishing world and describes what he looks for in a manuscript. He'll also touch on the qualities an author should look for in a good literary agent and how to find one. Let's get into the interview. So, John, thank you for joining us. And could you start off by telling us a bit about your background and what you do?
Well, thank you for the kind introduction, Tanya. It's great to visit with you.
Of course.
I'll soon be celebrating 30 years working as a literary agent, and I've been very fortunate. Hundreds of great, talented writers over the years in many, many different categories. And prior to working as an agent, I was working in sales and marketing for publishing companies. And then became an editor in academic publishing, then a senior editor in professional subscription publishing, and then eventually an executive editor for business books with Prentice Hall, Simon & Schuster, and did that before taking the leap and starting my own firm. But that's all, you know, that's all a part of resumes and, you know, our professional, you know, backgrounds. And I try to emphasize, you know, to folks that, you know, you really, become a part of publishing, I think, when you become a reader. And for many of us that, that starts at an early age. And I was very fortunate. My grandmother was a school teacher, my mother was a voracious reader. She used to come home from the library with stacks of books. So I grew up with some great writers like Leon Uris and John Cheever and Barbara McCulley and writers like that, all in the midst of the baseball and basketball games and everything else going on when you were growing up those days. When kids actually played outside.
You know, I was blessed to come from a similar family where I remember I would be so excited in elementary school when the Scholastic Books order form came. And my mother always said, whatever you want, order whatever you want. And I probably would get a dozen books. It was like thrilling when the delivery came.
Yeah, no, that was great. And that was a gift. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tried to pass that on to, you know, to my sons, you know, and whether it was, you know, just reading and, you know, newspapers. And if it was just reading about sports or whatever their interest, you know, were, it's just to get them to become, you know, become readers. And now, thankfully, they're passing that along to their kids and reading Dr. Seuss and great authors, you know, for kids and for adults, you know, too. But
yeah,
it all starts when when we're very young. But as for writers, you know, too, I mean, that's being a reader, you know, and learning from the masters and, you know, in the craft, mm-hmm. you know, of writing. It's all part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the folks who are brand new to the publishing business, can you give us a high-level overview of what a literary agent does?
Yes, a little bit of history, you know, with that to start, perhaps, I think is helpful. I'm a great lover of history, you know, so when you look back in the early 20th century, actually, when the author-publisher relationship was pretty much, you know, an author going to a printer and there was a handshake, you know, about what was going to be, you know, printed, you know, and published. Some great books, actually. Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass was started that way, and you know, and many writers and many great publishers began as printers. John Wiley and Sons, and the Harper Brothers, which became Harper and Row, and folks like that. Well, it started to evolve that, you know, these folks who are printers started, you know, saying to those authors, you know, hey, you know, we could add some value here to what you're doing by, you know, editing, you know, the works and, you know, doing more as far as production and the printing, you know, of it and adding skills and then distributing and selling. So what then evolved from printers to our current day publishers, where we were adding all of this, you know, professional expertise, you know, to the process. But with that then came contracts. So, you know, the handshake evolved now to, you know, to today to, you know, 15, 20 page contracts. So a lot of literary, you know, folks started, you know, as attorneys and looking at it, you know, and we still have to have, you know, lots of, you know, legal expertise, especially today with, you know, all the different, you know, formats and rights issues that come, that are involved, you know, with contracts. So we wear all the way of saying, you know, that today we wear quite a few hats. There is that hat of, you know, working the financials and the deals, you know, with publishers that then works to, you know, to contracts and being skilled, you know, at that. At the same time, in the beginning of the process, where, you know, and our responsibility in many ways to publishers is helping them in terms of filtering and vetting, you know, projects, you know, for them, given all the volume, you know, in the marketplace. So we're working too as kind of, you know, as kind of content, you know, coaches for, you know, for authors, helping them shape their proposals, you know, and their works that we feel can be attractive to these publishers. You know, again, quite a few hats. And I also say that I have a nice couch in my office for, you know, for my authors. So when they need a little therapy to get through the process, that's all part of it too, being a cheerleader and, you know, a little bit of, when it's needed, a little bit of tough love that comes with it. But that's what you need an agent, you know, in fact, and, you know, someone, you know, an agent for is being able to tell you sometimes what others may not be wanting or, you know, willing to tell you that needs to get done, you know, with the project.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very, very true. And the same thing, of course, happens on the publisher side. There's a lot of coaching and cheerleading and handholding and, yes, therapy.
As you well know, it's a very collaborative, you know, process, and you're working with someone over the course, you know, of years. So, you know, again, part of our responsibility, you know, to publishers is then, you know, making sure that, you know, people that we're working with are, you know, very, that do have a bit of a collaborative spirit, you know, and again, they're going to be great, to, you know, great to work with, not just in terms of the book, but eventually as far as, you know, the sales and promotion.
At what point should an author consider submitting to a literary agent, and how do they go about finding one?
That's a great question. I you know, the submission to a literary agent, you know, they, especially all the, you know, the options that writers, you know, have today. I mean, there's the quote unquote traditional path going, you know, to a publisher. There's hybrid publishers that you're familiar with that have a little different, you know, financial model for writers. There's self-publishing. There's just doing, you know, e-books. There's more opportunities for, you know, for writers today. I don't make judgments, you know, that one size fits all. You know, for some writers, it could be best, you know, for them, you know, to be self-publishing, and it could be best for them to be working, you know, with a, you know, with a hybrid publisher. In all of those instances, though, Tanya, I think what I really emphasize, are writers, are they ready in terms of, you know, having done their research and their homework into the marketplace? When you're submitting to a literary agent, you're assuming then that we're going to be then submitting to publishers who will be investors, in your work. So those investors are looking for obviously a return, you know, on their investment. So they want to know, and they want to know pretty quickly, you know, today, what's the unique value that you're bringing, you know, to the marketplace. And I'll hold that's true, you know, whether you are going to be self-publishing or, you know, working, you know, just doing an ebook or, you know, whatever. I find that a lot of folks are in a bit of a, let's say, a bull's rush, if you will, you know, to get published. And that leads them then to a lot of, you know, self-publishing, you know, today. So I'm always advocating, you know, that authors really put the time in, you know, to do the homework and the research, and that's essentially when they're ready, you know, to submit to a literary agent.
Yeah, well said. And I think we can all acknowledge that there are good players and bad players in our industry, as with any industry. So how does the author vet their agent? How do you know if you have a legit agent?
That's a great question today, because as with so many businesses and industries, you know, there's been a little bit of a rise, you know, in the scammers, you know, out there. I always refer people to, you know, Writer's Digest. The Writer's Digest group, their magazine. In fact, this current issue of Writer's Digest magazine, one of their lead stories is on 20 agents unveil which stories they want now. They do an agent, you know, roundup, you know, in the magazine. And a lot of great, you know, writing tips, you know, too. And they have conferences around the country that agents, you know, attend. So going to conferences, and now, of course, even, you know, when they're virtual, you know, the agents that are attending conferences, you know, that's obviously a signal, you know, in terms of their being, you know, legitimate and respected, you know, in a certain industry. And you have in every sort of genre conferences, you know, like this. One of my favorites actually is the Thriller Fest, you know, conference. And Thriller Fest is all about, you know, the mystery and thriller, you know, writers getting together. It's a wonderful group and a great group of agents that, you know, attend that conference. So when you're an agent and you're attending, you know, these conferences, that's usually by invitation. And that's a great signal for prospective, you know, authors. The other guides, the Writer's Digest also has a guide to literary agents. My good friend Jeff Herman has a guide to literary, you know, agents, which profiles the agencies and what they're looking for, you know, which is very important. Rick Frischman has had a series of books and a group called Author 101. In a lot of those books, whether they're books about writing book proposals, I think there's one volume on best-selling secrets from, you know, from agents. You know, the agents are, you know, are quoted in there. So there's a lot of, you know, of those resources, you know, out there, you know, for prospective, you know, aspiring writers, you know, to look at and research. One other that the folks may not necessarily think about is when they are doing their research, you know, in their category, and they're looking at those, you know, 4 to 5 key competitive books, most writers are pretty gracious in their acknowledgments, you know, about, you know, who they've worked with. And many times that includes their agent. I've been very fortunate, you know, you get noted, you know, in the acknowledgments, you know, of these books. And so I would encourage folks to really read the acknowledgments, you know, of the books that are in their particular, you know, area. And that gives them real clues as to, you know, who's working in their specific topic zone.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. And I often get the question of whether fiction or nonfiction, because different rules for each. Do I have to have a completed manuscript when I approach my agent?
Well, when you're working in fiction, that has to be the case. You know, the manuscript needs to be, you know, pristine. And the treatment and the synopsis, there's just tremendous volume in the world of fiction. And folks, you know, take years sometimes in terms of honing their manuscript and having developmental editors, you know, and reviewers reviewing their manuscripts. So that's a big part of it. Before you even get to that, again, in terms of the strategy for all of that, sometimes it's worthwhile for those fiction writers to have published short stories, you know, in certain journals or, you know, or magazines. It sort of gives a little bit of validation, you know, in terms of their credentials. So having the manuscript in fiction, you know, is a given, absolutely needed. And you really, as far as the manuscript, it needs to be engaging, you know, throughout, but spend that time on that first sentence. Stephen King, God bless him, he wrote one of the most wonderful books on, and it's called On Writing, which I would highly recommend, you know, to everybody, whether they're fiction writers or nonfiction writers. But, and it's kind of his personal, opening up, you know, his personal stories and anecdotes and tips, you know, about writing. And he really emphasizes the value of the first sentence, you know, and how a writer really needs to essentially, in his words, grab a reader by the throat and bring him into the story. and I'll hold that's true these days, you know, too, for nonfiction. I was quite surprised, actually, at a recent conference when I, after folks, you know, spending so much time pitching me about their work, and then I would ask them what was their first, you know, what's their first sentence? And they couldn't come up with it, you know. And so that really is still, you know, very important in the world of fiction. Nonfiction, you know, it's a little different. What's referred to as a synopsis and treatment in fiction is referred to as a book proposal in nonfiction. And the book proposal has really become much more than a book proposal. It's really the investment document that goes beyond an editor and beyond the description, you know, of the book to more of a business plan, if you will, about the content of their book and how a publisher can profit from not just the, you know, the book itself, but all of the content in the various formats today. Be it digital, be it, you know, audio, or whether their topic has the potential to travel internationally and be of interest to, you know, to foreign publishers. So, you know, a lot has to go into the kind of thinking about that book proposal. And there's a lot of great guides on book proposals, but I try to give my clients and aspiring authors a sense that it is an investment tool for that company to be shared within the company by the folks in publicity and marketing. So they have to view it as something that's beyond just about describing a book.
Mm-hmm. And while the proposal certainly needs to be complete at the time that you're submitting to publishers, the nonfiction manuscript does not. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. And here's where some of my colleagues differ a little bit. Again, because of that investor kind of frame, I think any publisher is going to feel a whole lot better knowing that they have sample chapters, and sometimes even beyond sample chapters, a draft of the manuscript. There's a cottage industry that's developed over the years of proposal crafters. A lot of great people, some of them real friends of mine who are former editors. But if they're going to write a proposal for you or work with you on that, that's not really going to tell an editor and a really savvy editor much about, your writing voice and that voice that they're investing, in. So the sample chapters, I think, are critical because they highlight, you as a writer in terms of your voice, even again, in nonfiction, which is so important today. But it also, too, in terms of, all that you're involved with as a writer, maybe you're running a company, maybe you're a marketing director, or maybe, you're doing lots of things besides writing. It signals, to an agent, and it signals to, a publisher where the work fits in, with your priorities and your responsibilities. So I think having those chapters, I always view that as a very positive, aspect of it. And when I submit to publishers, I like to have, a proposal with sample chapters.
And when you are looking at prospective new projects to take on, what are you looking for as an agent? What really piques your interest when someone reaches out to you?
Well, I mentioned that, the unique value aspect of all of this. And that to me really has to, to come through. We all know how crowded, the marketplace is today. And that's just in terms of books. I mean, when you look at the whole information landscape and all the people are receiving, whether it's online or, audio, today and podcasts and streaming, we're all competing now, in that world, and book publishers are too. So they want to, they want to know pretty quickly, what it is that you're bringing to this marketplace that, is unique and is going to be, of value to those readers, so that has to, I think, come through pretty quickly in the work. I also then, once that's established, I mean, then you're looking at how is all of this aligned with an author's everyday activities. To the earlier point about proposals and how they're reviewed by promotion and publicity people, what is it about your work that's going to help, the publisher sell the work in this kind of new marketplace today? And that's not just coming from the publishers. I mean, when they sit down and they're pitching their new books to Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and all the distributors are asking, the publishers, hey, what is this author going to be doing to help us, sell it in this new marketplace? So I'm looking at, a few of those aspects. And then, you get to the actual writing and the research involved in that work and proposal.
Yeah, that point about differentiation, I really can't underscore that heavily enough, because I like to tell my authors about a strange case of worlds colliding. To age myself a bit here, in the late 90s, I was a producer for E! Entertainment Network, and I handled the book beat because I was one of the younger producers and nobody wanted to be pitched books for an entertainment network that focused on celebrities. And so I had countless books come across my desk every day, people, publishers and publicists often pitching me the same book. And I would make my decision in maybe 2 seconds. And that was, again, late 90s. So before we had the volume of today. But the publishers know very quickly when something is different. And also as quickly, something is the same. And so that the title, the cover, all of these things really deserve the utmost attention for that reason.
They really, that's a great point, Tanya. And again, it speaks to your experience and, you know, anyone who's, you know, been in this field. And so the task is, how do you kind of pitch a project? And this could be a, you know, whether it's a book, you know, proposal, or you're pitching, you know, a new, you know, film, or, you know, that, you know, to someone's ear, given all that they receive every day, you know, then you imagine an editor, you know, in their office and they're all of the book, not just all the books that they're, you know, receiving, but, you know, all the magazines in the topic area and journals and all of that. And then you go online and you've got all the online content and everything else. So how is it that, you know, you're going to engage them to your point about the, you know, the title and the subtitling, which is very important, you know, part, you know, of the proposal and the pitch in a way that engages them, you know, right away, their curiosity to about the work and about the topic. And, you know, that sometimes that takes time. Mm-hmm. That takes time. But that's what, you know, again, part of working with an agent, you know, in and there's hundreds of wonderful, you know, agents, you know, that are working in different topic areas. And so they're in it every day. They're in contact, you know, with editors, and an agent will push back and say to you, you know, I really like it. I really like your work. I like, you know, what you're doing here, but you know what? Your title sucks. You know, or your subtitle is really not telling us, you know, the better place that you're going to take me to with your work. So that's all, again, part of what, you know, we do as agents.
That's it for part one of our interview with John Willig today. We hope you enjoyed learning about what it's like to work with a literary agent. For notes and resources from today's show, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode43. You can also find advice for writing, publishing, and promoting your work in my book, Ideas, Influence, and Income, which you can learn more about at ideasinfluenceandincome.com. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. It means a lot to have your feedback and certainly helps us make sure we're answering your publishing questions. Big thank you to Eleanor Fishborn, who produces the Published podcast, and we'll be back next month with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.